KVU Community Radio is proud to present Who is Gil Scott-Heron as part of the We Real Cool Jazz Series at the Clinton Street Theater Thursday, September 17th at 7 p.m. Who is Gil Scott-Heron is a portrait seen through the eyes of those who love Gil, his friends, his family, and the musicians he played with. All attending the theatrical screenings receive a download of Scott-Heron's last record, Nothing New. Again, that's Who is Gil Scott-Heron, Thursday, September 17th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kvu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Rockets and moonshots.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our Membership Drive special edition of the KBOO Evening News, owners of websites that get hacked will be subjected to fines from the federal government.
California has taken the first step towards labeling the Monsanto herbicide Roundup as a known cause of cancer.
And Washington State and the Suquamish tribe are entering into the first agreement in the nation dealing with retail marijuana sales on tribal lands. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, September 15th, 2015. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Nicole Weinstock.
And I'm Jared Dantzler. Oregon Governor Kate Brown has invoked the Emergency Conflagration Act in response to the Dry Gulch fire burning in Baker County. At the same time of the declaration, the fire had grown to more than 12,000 acres and about 275 homes were threatened. The governor's declaration authorizes the Oregon Office of State Marshal to mobilize the structural firefighters and equipment to assist local resources battling the fire. In California, three major fires are still burning out of control. Governor Jerry Brown warns there is more to come. Approximately 270,000 acres of land and over 700 homes have been burned so far. Barbara McWilliams, a 72-year-old disabled woman, was killed. She had no way to get out on her own, and by the time rescue crews reached her subdivision, it was already fully engulfed in flames.
The state of Washington and the Suquamish tribe have agreed to the nation's first ever marijuana compact. The agreement covers the production, processing, purchase, and sale of marijuana on tribal land. Washington State recognizes the Suquamish tribe as a sovereign nation and negotiated the contract in lieu of licensing through the state's Liquor and Cannabis Board. Under the agreement, a tribal tax equivalent to the state's excise tax would be applied on sales of marijuana to people who are not members of the Suquamish tribe. Plans currently call for a retail operation, the Suquamish Evergreen Corporation, to open sometime in November. The store is to be located about a half mile from the Suquamish Clearwater Casino Resort. A spokesperson for the Suquamish tribe said there are currently no plans to begin growing marijuana, but a cultivation operation was a possibility in the future. The Suquamish Compact now goes to Washington Governor Jay Inslee for his signature. After it's signed, the agreement will remain in effect for 10 years.
The U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration recently released its annual National Survey on Drug Use and Health. This new report shows that progress is being made in reducing the levels of substance use among young people. About 11.5% of young people between ages 12 and 17 were estimated to be current alcohol users. That's considerably lower than the roughly 17.5% of that age group who reporting current alcohol use in 2004. Heavy alcohol use by young people has also dropped dramatically. From more than 2.5% of those aged 12 to 17 in 2004 to just 1% of that age group in 2014. Use of any illegal drug among all people aged 12 or older did show an increase in 2014 compared with 2004. However, much of that growth was due to an increase in marijuana use, and mostly that was among adults. The survey showed an increase in heroin use overall, with about 0.3% of the population 12 or older reporting past year heroin use in 2014, compared with 0.2% in 2004. The report also shows a dramatic drop in tobacco use, with just over 25% of those 12 and older reporting past month use in 2014, compared with just over 29% in 2004.
A federal court has approved an agreement between the City of Molalla and the Bear Creek Recovery Conservation Group over the faulty operations of the city's sewage plant. The lawsuit was originally filed in March of 2014 and claimed the City of Molalla was violating the Federal Clean Water Act due to poor maintenance and operation of the city's sewage plant. The agreement, reached between the conservation group and the Molalla City government, stipulates the city must spend at least $250,000 over the next 2 years on repairs to the sewage facility and leaking sewage pipes located throughout the city. This is the second lawsuit against the City of Molalla for their failure to operate the city's sewage plant in accordance with federal statutes. A prior lawsuit and subsequent legal agreement in 2006 forced the city to clean up the sewage plant. Court documents show that after the 2006 agreement expired in 2009, the city once again began violating the Federal Clean Water Act.
And now something a little different from H2O Radio, This Week in Water.
Floods in Japan sweep away radioactive waste. That and other stories for the week ending September 13th, 2015.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
At least five people were killed, and more than a dozen are still missing because of heavy flooding in Japan last week. The pounding rains forced the evacuation of almost 3 million people.
The strongest rain fell in storms north and east of Tokyo and caused rainwater containing radioactive material to be released into the ocean from the disabled Fukushima nuclear power plant.
Additionally, bags filled with grass and soil from work to remove radioactive substances from Fukushima were swept away by flooded rivers.
Climate change might have been a factor in the heavy precipitation. Ocean temperatures around Japan have been rising in recent years, producing vapor and making air conditions unstable, ideal for storms to incubate. Chinese scientists have discovered that an immense amount of water exists underneath a desert in a remote northwestern region of their country.
The size of the discovery is stunning. The large amount of water in this underground sea is estimated to be about 10 times the quantity of the Great Lakes of North America.
While the water quality is way too salty for drinking, the massive aquifer stores carbon and stops it from being released into the atmosphere.
Researchers were studying the role the world's deserts play in soaking up and storing carbon emissions from human activity when they found the desert ocean.
One of the Chinese scientists told Discovery News that the aquifer is like a can of Coke. If it were somehow opened, all the greenhouse gas would escape into the atmosphere.
All of the Earth's oceans absorb carbon, which keeps it out of the atmosphere. But too much carbon in the oceans is causing acidification and leads to the destruction of vulnerable food chains.
26 years ago, the Exxon Valdez oil tanker struck a reef and spilled a massive amount of crude oil into Alaskan coastal waters.
About 4 years after the spill, the local fishing industry that caught herring collapsed. And while it may seem obvious why that occurred, there was a lot of controversy over the role oil played in the decline.
Last week, a study was published in the journal Scientific Report that analyzed the long-term effects on fish from ingesting small quantities of oil.
Both salmon and herring, exposed as embryos to trace levels of crude oil, grew into juveniles with abnormal hearts and reduced cardiorespiratory function. The bottom line, the fish swim slower and are more vulnerable to predators.
Scientific confirmation of the effects of spilled oil on fish health is critical now as Shell is conducting exploratory drilling in the Alaskan Arctic, where the U.S. government has said the chance of a disaster is 75%. The Salton Sea has seen better days. At 350 square miles, California's largest lake was once a playground for Hollywood stars and was a popular destination for fishing and boating.
But now it's shrinking, stark, and largely abandoned. Agricultural runoff that feeds the lake has declined, and more troubles loom. First, in 2017, an agreement to transfer water to San Diego will reduce flows, and second, prolonged droughts due to climate change are expected to only exacerbate the situation.
And that stinks, literally. As the waters recede, the lake becomes saltier and saltier, leading to fish die-offs. Those decaying fish, along with leaves and other organic matter, emit noxious bubbles of hydrogen sulfide gas.
The gas resembles the smell of rotten eggs, and residents link it to increased asthma attacks and respiratory problems. Last week, gas levels were more than 6 times the state standard, setting an all-time record, an unfortunate milestone for a lake that many consider a vital habitat for birds and fish.
But help could be on the way. 2 weeks ago, Governor Jerry Brown filled a newly created position to oversee restoration of the lake. But fully restoring the sea to its original size isn't likely to happen. The most popular plan aims to maintain a smaller but sustainable Salton Sea, ringed by wildlife habitats and renewable energy projects.
A more manageable lake will hopefully tamp down comparisons to Owens Lake, which had its water siphoned off by Los Angeles in the early 20th century and went on to become the largest source of dust pollution in the entire country.
And finally this week, speaking of strong scents, perhaps you vacationed in Paris this summer. Home to art, fashion, good food, and culture. Its picturesque cityscape is crisscrossed by wide boulevards, the River Seine, and
the most amazing sewer system ever. Surely your visit to the City of Light included a stop at this top tourist attraction? The labyrinth of tunnels beneath the Paris streets is a must-see for anyone interested in engineering and public works, and for fans of Victor Hugo's Les Misérables and the musical that it inspired.
During Hugo's time, the system was 360 miles long and had iron pipes for drinking water and sewage. It became such a tourist draw that mechanized cars were added to carry well-heeled Parisians throughout the vaulted channels whilst they reclined at tables in their finery.
Perhaps it was the growing popularity of the sewers that inspired Hugo to incorporate them into his novel. He saw the sewers as the conscience of the city, a place where class distinctions disappeared, but he also saw the system as a frustrating missed opportunity to use the sewage as fertilizer.
If you do go, don't forget to stop at the gift shop where you can pick up a souvenir stuffed rat, but be prepared for strong aromas.
Yes, the pungent bouquet during your visit will inspire you to make your next stop to purchase another thing Paris is famous for, perfume.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game.
Donnie Trump is said to be...
to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Ken and Ani to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you so much, Nicole. This is Ani. I'm here with Ken, and we are asking for your support this afternoon for KBOO's fall membership drive for KBOO, your very own community radio station. This is a listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered community radio station. What does that mean? It means that the programming you hear on KBOO is brought to you by volunteers from the communities who have come in to learn how to be the media and to learn how to be investigative reporters, to be citizen journalists, to put a newscast together. We have Sequoina volunteering in the air room right now, being the board op, the engineer. We have Nicole, we have Jared. They are the news announcers. They are volunteers. We've had volunteers throughout the day putting the newscast together, and we are asking for your financial financial support. That's the listener-sponsored part of that equation. Right now, to support this effort, support the training mechanism that is KABU, support KABU as a broadcast outlet that gives you real information and real news, and that is actually acting as a powerful force of social change here in the region and around the world. Call us, 877-500-5266, and say, yes, you want to become a member of KABU right now. 877-500-5266.
Ani, I like that term, a citizen journalist. That's something that I actually do at KABU on Mondays. And I got to tell you, we even though we're citizen journalists and we're not professionals by any means in terms of salary, we're all volunteers.
Being that volunteer part, yeah. Yeah.
There's certainly stories we cover here that you won't find anywhere else, or there'll be certain aspects of a story that you'll hear on KABU that you won't hear on KGW or some of the other stations around town. And I can give you an example from yesterday. Yesterday we covered a story of a neighborhood southeast 41st in Clinton, where a developer had bought a lot, demolished a house last month, and last Saturday cut down two of four old-growth Douglas fir trees, each over 100 years old. The two remaining trees, the neighbors have banded together, and they're trying to get the developer to give up plans to cut those down. We covered that. There was a related story not far from there in Eastmoreland, three sequoia trees, same developer. Now, what the media covered some of those stories because they were interesting, but what they didn't tell you is that the same developer was involved in both of those, Vic Remmers of Everett Custom Homes. Not only that, but this man was also appointed to a special stakeholders committee appointed by Mayor Charlie Hales to ensure that this kind of thing never happens. In other words, that new and remodeled homes in these neighborhoods, it's called infill in Portland, retain the flavor of the neighborhood. And obviously this is not happening when you're cutting down all the trees, especially trees that are 100 years old. And those are beautiful trees too. Anyway, these are aspects of the story. Just an example there that you'll hear on the KABU Evening News every weekday at 5 o'clock that you won't hear anywhere else. So to support efforts like that, please give us a call now to become a new member or renew your membership, 877-500-5266, or go online at kboo.fm. We just had Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, and that was 4 to 6. Of course, that's 4 to 6 every weekday. You can call in as a special gift. You can get a Democracy Now! T-shirt for a minimum pledge of $75. We also have a 4-gig drive, USB drive, with all sorts of content, spoken word and music from KABU's archives that you can get as a gift. Or just call up our volunteers on the phone right now at 877-500-5266. They can guide you through the process. You could pay one lump sum, become a sustaining member, give us a monthly amount through your credit card, your debit card, or your checking account. Again, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. And now back to Jared and Nicole.
Brothers got this complex, got depression.
You are connected.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program. Just call 877-500-5266. And stay tuned for QTPOC Talk, hosted by Justin McDaniels, NORAD at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, the daily hip-hop talk show. Today's weather, chance of rain and a low around 54. Tomorrow, more rain and a high near 65. Today in history, 1963, four young African-American girls are killed by a bombing of a church in Birmingham, Alabama. Their names were Addie Mae Collins, Cynthia Wesley, Carol Robertson, and Denise McNair. The quote of the day is by James A. Forbes. "The saddest face I ever saw on Martin Luther King was at the funeral of the four little girls slain in Birmingham, Alabama."
It's 5:18. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Donnie Trump is said to be the goofiest presidential pretender in the GOP stable. But after all, he's a professional, made-for-TV stuntman. So his P.T. Barnum political shtick is no surprise. But the real surprise is that the flare-haired Donald is getting a serious challenge for goofiest of them all from an amateur practitioner of slapstick, Scott Walker. Only a few weeks ago, the political cognoscenti were hailing the sleepy-eyed Wisconsin governor as one of the, quote, serious candidates in the Republican herd. But he has since done so many splashy flip-flops on his policies that SeaWorld is reportedly trying to hire him to do backflips with Shamu. For example, he had previously been a quasi-sane Republican on the issue of citizenship for some undocumented immigrants. But when Trump surged to front-runner status as a flaming, maniacal immigrant basher, suddenly Scotty began foaming at the mouth like a mad dog, trying to out-bash Donnie. Yes, he yapped, Trump is right that we need to build a big old hermetically sealed wall on the Mexican border, but he frantically exclaimed, we also need to build a wall across our northern border with Canada. Canada? Even Republicans hooted at such overwrought goofiness. As Rand Paul politely put it, that's a pretty dumb idea. So dumb that Governor Goofy collapsed into an addlepated heap of denial. I didn't say that at all, he barked a couple of days later. I've never talked about a wall to the north. Only he had. On Meet the Press, the national TV show, Walker was asked directly, do you want to build a wall north of here too? Rather than laugh it off, Walker declared with a straight face, that is a legitimate issue for us to look at. This is Jim Hightower saying, a 4,000-mile wall to protect us from friendly Canadians? Or maybe he wants to keep us from escaping to Canada if he becomes president. Walker is serious, all right. Seriously goofy.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
A federal judge ruling this week will mean that the owners of websites that get hacked will be subjected to fines from the federal government. Not the hackers, but the websites that get hacked. This ruling by the Third Circuit Court has online activists up in arms, as they say it blames the victim of hacking and phishing attacks. The Wyndham Hotel Group was brought to court after its website was hacked three times in 2008 and 2009, and customers' credit card data was stolen. The Federal Trade Commission has the power to take action against organizations that employ poor digital security practices. Although the ruling was against the Wyndham Hotel Group, it will also affect companies like Anthem, Target, and recently Ashley Madison, who have all recently suffered from hacker attacks on their websites.
Hostile goats demanding food from hikers have caused the U.S. Forest Service to close the Scotchman Peak Trail in Idaho. Forest Service employees say that hikers created this problem by feeding the goats, sometimes letting the goats eat from their hands. This trail is in the Idaho Panhandle National Forests, and true to the forest's name, the goats have gotten used to panhandling. Now they get mad when they are not fed and retaliate by headbutting or charging hikers. One hiker was bitten by a goat and required stitches. The Forest Service hopes that, by closing the trail temporarily, the goats will have time to find other sources of food and that they will be less likely to beg from humans.
And you are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work so hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it's your turn. Joining us again, Ken and Ani, to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Oh, thanks, Jared. Thanks, Nicole. We're back here. This is Ken and Ani in Fall Membership Drive Central. And where are you going to hear stories like that about aggressive goats in Idaho? Only on KPU on the evening news. No, that's actually a little lighter news bit. But it's important to support newscasts like this. We have our evening news 5 o'clock every weekday. 5 to 6, just after Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! So if you haven't become a member yet, call us now, 877-500-5266. You can go online at kboo.fm. Ani was talking before about you can give $60 a year on a monthly basis, $90 a year on a monthly basis, $120 on a monthly basis. So I took about a half hour or so and did the math. And at about a $60 pledge, and we were talking how painless is it. It is. It's actually $1.15 a week, 16 cents a day. $90 pledge, 25 cents a day, $1.73 a week. $120 pledge, only 33 cents a day, $2.31 a week. That $90 pledge, in fact, $90 will pay for 1 hour of KBOO programming, which is just amazing. We keep saying we run on a shoestring budget, and that's the truth. It's a little over $80,000 a year, Ani, is the budget?
Yeah, $800,000 a year. Yeah, it's about $817,000 every year.
Oh, I said $80,000. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, it's a
magnitude.
Just throw in another zero.
Yeah.
And that comes out to being about $2,200 a day. It's about $93 an hour. So right now, by you stepping to the phone and say starting or upping your monthly contribution to KBOO to $15 a month, that means that you'll be taking care of 2 hours of programming, just you, your very own self. And if you add that together with all your friends and neighbors, all of the other community members supporting KBOO Community Radio, it adds up to what we need to really round out our budget for the year. Right now, take this moment to do that. Take the action that sustains us and supports your entire community at 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. We do have that 4 gig flash drive. I'm totally excited about the 4 gig flash drive for your $75 minimum contribution, and you can do that $6.25 a month. You can do that as a minimum. You can do pledge anything more than that you would want, but you could get this 4 gig flash drive for your very own self, and you can pass that around, share the information on it. We've got great speeches, great lectures, great information and programs, and music as well, live in studio performances from a number of bands from a variety of genres. But maybe most importantly, right now to the news, there are some really important purveyors of information on that flash drive, aren't there, Ken?
Oh, it's just an amazing list here, Ani, from the KBOO archives. So all this was recorded for KBOO, their interviews. In fact, there's one interview here in 1969 with a younger Pete Seeger, exclusively available on the flash drive.
Pete Seeger.
Margaret Mead, 1968. Molly Ivins, one of my favorite Texans, along with Rosalind Scott from 1992. Ken Kesey at Powell, September 92. Stokely Carmichael, 1973. Eldridge Cleaver, 1998. John Trudell. Dick Gregory from 1967. Paul Robeson back from 1957. Now, that was not broadcast originally.
That was before KBOO was born.
That was.
but we actually brought that in from the Pacifica archives. I think that they have given us a few of those things from before our inception in 1968. But all of this information and music and culture comes to you on a 4 gig flash drive. Again, you can share it with your friends and family. And I think it's wonderfully edifying material there. So do give us a call. $75 can take that as your thank you gift. 877-500-5266.
You know, Ani, we talked before about media consolidation, and it's now at an all-time high. We talked about media consolidation for Democracy Now.
And how much that's been further and further consolidated.
Yeah, that was national, right? But just in Portland alone, five companies, I can name them here, Entercom, CBS, Clear Channel, Salem Communications, and Bustos Media own the majority of the media. So KBOO is one of the few independent voices still left in the city. If you want to support independent news organizations like KBOO, where you know that corporate money and politicians are not controlling what you're hearing, you can still get that on KBOO. Give us a call. Become a new member at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
And this is your turn. Do it now. You can come to 20 Southeast 8th. We'd love to show you around. Or just pick up that phone and dial 877-500-5266. Be a part of KBOO. You know you've already joined us with your ears, with your mind. You know that we are who you turn to, or at least one of those sources that's important to you for news, information, analysis, interviews with authors. Ursula Le Guin was in our studios this morning being interviewed for a program that's coming up very soon.
October 1st on Between the Covers.
Yep. I get to interview March Piercy this Friday. I mean, we bring you renowned literary figures. We bring you community organizers from the grassroots level. We bring you internationally known and analysts and journalists. What more can you ask for in your own backyard, in your volunteer-powered community radio station? Not a whole lot, my friends. KBOO's been doing it for 47 years, and we need your support to continue on for another 47. Be a part of this amazing legacy of community radio by calling 877-500-5266. You are listening to the locally produced evening news broadcast. People said that volunteers couldn't produce an hour's broadcast every evening for the local news. Very few other stations around the country attempt a local newscast that is done primarily by volunteers. We here at KBOO consider it a mark of our pride. We love to train community members to become citizen journalists and to use the media to get out there and spread the truth. So right now we ask that you support the effort. Give us a call, 877-500-5266.
The state of California has taken the first step towards officially labeling the Monsanto herbicide Roundup as known to cause cancer in humans. Earlier this year, the main ingredient in Roundup, glyphosate, was labeled by the World Health Organization as a probable human carcinogen. Several countries around the world have issued bans on the non-commercial use of Roundup, including Mexico, Russia, and France, among others. The California Environmental Protection Agency has filed a notice of intent to list glyphosate as a known carcinogenic. The public comments run until October 5th of this year before the California State EPA proceeds with the listing process. The main ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup, glyphosate, is the world's most applied herbicide and is contained in more than 750 different products. Glyphosate usage has increased by more than 3,000% over the last two decades and is implicated in the worldwide population collapses of both honeybees and the monarch butterfly.
Here is more evidence that America is not colorblind. A newly released study found that black kids get less pain medicine than their white counterparts when visiting the emergency room for acute appendicitis. The study by Dr. Monica Goyal was published yesterday in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Dr. Goyal says that black patients with moderate pain were less likely to receive any analgesia, and black patients with severe pain were less likely to be treated with opioids, even though there is broad agreement among experts that it's a condition that merits pain relief. 41% of the kids got opioid drug like hydrocodone, but among black kids, only 12% got the stronger pain relievers. Goyal says that our findings suggest that although clinicians may recognize pain equally across racial groups, they may be reacting to the pain differently by treating black kids with non-opioid analgesia, such as ibuprofen and acetaminophen, while treating white patients with opioid analgesia for similar pain.
The Labour Party in London is now led by a peace activist. Jeremy Corbyn does not resemble many politicians in the UK or the US. Peace activists throughout the UK are celebrating what they see as a major victory for peace in British politics. Corbyn has called for the conviction of war criminals, including Tony Blair. Corbyn says the British Prime Minister should be charged for his role in the 2003 attack on Iraq. He chairs the Stop the War Coalition, one of the biggest peace organizations in Britain. He meets with foreign peace activists who would never get an audience with other politicians. In his victory speech, Jeremy Corbyn stated that the British Parliament is made up of warlords and war criminals, and he credited the Stop the War Coalition with having helped to prevent an attack on Iran in recent years. He also pointed out that the two sides fighting in Libya could exchange parts for their rifles because they both had rifles that had been provided by the British government.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises.
For Workers Independent News, I'm Joanne Powers. Efforts are underway by consumers and legislators to put an end to the use of slave labor and human trafficking in the fishing industry. Consumers recently filed lawsuits against two of the nation's largest producers of pet foods, Mars and Nestle, over failing to disclose the use of forced labor in their supply chains from the Thai fishing industry. New York Representative Carolyn Maloney also introduced legislation in the House last week to require businesses to publicly disclose what actions they have undertaken to remove labor abuses from their supply chains. She says, "There is no question that many goods being sold to American consumers are produced with slave labor, and we have a moral obligation to do something about it," unquote. A new study from the Center for American Progress and researchers from Harvard and Wellesley shows that the percentage of union members in an area is one of the most important factors for determining the future economic success of its children. CAP Managing Director for Economic Policy David Madland says these results both are and aren't surprising.
For those people who are union supporters, I think the results are not that surprising. I've had a bunch of union people come up to me and saying, "You're describing my life. My parents were in a union and they were able to work at a blue-collar job and help put me through school, and as a result, I've achieved this level." But on another level, the results are deeply surprising. There has been decades of research on economic mobility showing deep concern that the U.S. has lower mobility than most every other advanced country, fears that our mobility is declining, and no one previously had looked at the role that unions play.
It's not only children with unionized parents whose economic future is brighter as the result of a union presence.
Children whose parents were unionized do better on a whole bunch of outcomes, but when workers join together in unions and they have some power, they also are able to influence the politics of an area. Unions help make public investments. They push, for example, for a school system to spend more money to educate all children.
A unanimous jury on Thursday awarded more than $17 million to five immigrant farm workers raped and sexually harassed at Moreno Farms in South Florida. According to the lawsuit, two of the owner's sons and a third male supervisor engaged in graphic acts of sexual harassment against female workers in their packing house, including regular groping and propositioning, threatening employees with termination if they refused the supervisor's sexual advances, and attempting to rape and raping multiple employees. All five women were ultimately fired for opposing the sexual harassment. Unfortunately, the women are unlikely to collect any of the award, as the packing plant closed after the lawsuit was filed, and none of the men were ever arrested. Florida's Coalition of Immokalee Workers described the case as a powerful reminder of the ongoing epidemic of sexual violence in Florida's farming industry.
WIN made possible in part by the United Auto Workers and by the International Association of Machinists. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And now, we go to a special report on what happened today in labor history.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1845. 5,000 female workers at the Allegheny Cotton Mill went on strike for a 10-hour workday. The fast streams around Pittsburgh and Allegheny City were ideal to power cotton mills. The mills were overheated and filled with dangerous dust. Many of these women and child workers suffered from work-related lung diseases. The seven factories of Allegheny City employed about 1,500 young women. These women earned between $2.50 and $6 a week. They worked from sunrise to sunset, 6 days a week. Children made $3 a week at most. In 1843, factory owners cut wages even further. In the 1940s, a woman who had worked in the mills noted, "The ear filled with the noise of thousands of spindles." Anger over the deplorable working conditions grew. In early 1845, the women and children had had enough. They walked off the job and demanded a 10-hour workday and a living wage. Men supported them by gathering to protect the women from police attacks. After holding out for a month, the women began to return to work to survive. Some of the remaining strikers decided to try and remove the returning workers from the mills. They armed themselves with axes, but could not dislodge the workers. Public opinion turned against the striking women. Then, in September, workers marched on one of the largest area mills. The women broke down the factory gates and forcibly evicted the scab workers. The strike lasted for 6 months, but slowly, out of desperation, more and more more of the women workers went back to the mills. Although the women did not get their demands, the strike drew national attention. On Independence Day in 1848, the Pennsylvania legislature put into effect a 10-hour day law. But sadly, the law had numerous loopholes and had no real enforcement. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
And now we go to Planetary Radio with Dante Loretta, a professor of planetary science at the University of Arizona and a space investigator with NASA. Loretta heads the most ambitious mission to an asteroid ever mounted, which plans to send a rocket to Bennu, the closest asteroid to the planet Earth, in September 2016. But first, we're going to go for another pitch break, and we're going to talk to Ken and Ani about why you should support our community radio.
Oh, thanks, Jared. Thanks, Nicole. We'll get to that asteroid story after our pitch break. But I'd like to let you know that give us a call to become a new member or to renew your membership at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. You've been listening to Democracy Now! And our 5 p.m. volunteer-produced newscast, which we do every weekday, 4 o'clock Democracy Now! That's also on at 7 a.m. and our newscast at 5 p.m. And these are some of the few independent voices available, not only in Portland, but I think the entire state and the entire nation. It's kind of a dwindling community right now. So it's important to support it, or else you're going to, at some point, Monsanto and Rupert Murdoch are going to own all the news sources, and you're going to just kind of hear what they want you to hear. What you can do, though, is to prevent something like that is support community radio, support this independent news, Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, our 5 p.m. newscast, by calling and becoming a member now at 877-500-5266 or going online at kboo.fm. We usually suggest becoming a member, a sustaining member, which is a monthly amount that is very painless, comes out of your checking account, debit card, checking account, debit card, credit card. It's up to you. And we usually suggest an hour's wage. So say it's $10 an hour, a minimum wage in some parts of the country now, fortunately, $15 an hour. More than that, $20 an hour, $20 a month. And you can do that, again, very painlessly. And we have some gifts for you, too. We have Amy Goodman Democracy Now! T-shirt. That's for a minimum pledge of $75. And we also have the beautiful KBOO hoodie, and that's for a pledge of $20 a month, becoming a sustaining member at that $20 a month point. And again, credit card, debit card, or checking account, electronic fund transfer. So give us a call now. We have our volunteers here at the phones. They can walk you through the process. It's very easy. 877-500-5266, online at kboo.fm. And I broke that down before. Our pledge of $120 a year is just $2.31 a week, 33 cents a day, a $90 pledge, $1.73 a week, a $60 pledge, $1.15 a week. We usually use the proverbial latte as the amount to compare that to. And for any of those amounts, you couldn't even buy one latte. But you're supporting community radio with a weekly amount at that rate. So again, it's very painless. Call us 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We'll go back to the news in a minute, but I just want to tell you that the station runs on very little money. You can come down here, get a tour of the place. It's actually incredible what we produce on that budget of about $800,000 a year. So come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're just about a half block south of Burnside on Southeast 8th. Very easy to get through to public transportation, drive. Find a parking spot around here and let me know where you park, because that will help me in the future. But 877-500-5266. That way you don't have to use gas or anything like that. Just give us a call. We have volunteers here at the phones, online at kboo.fm. And again, that $800,000 annual budget, we figured out an hour of programming here costs us about $90. So for, say, an annual pledge of $90, which works out to be that 25 cents a day, I mean, that's the kind of money that you find in your couch between the cushions, you can support and sponsor, actually, an hour of radio here. It could be Democracy Now!, which is on, again, 7 to 8 in the morning, 4 to 5 in the afternoon, or our volunteer-produced newscasts from 5 to 6. So please give us a call now, 877-500-5266, or going online at kboo.fm.
And now we go to Planetary Radio with Dante Loretta, a professor of planetary science at the University of Arizona and a space investigator with NASA. Loretta heads the most ambitious mission to an asteroid ever mounted, which plans to send a rocket to Bennu, the closest asteroid to the planet Earth, in September 2016.
Let's explain these claims here, and then I want to talk about the math. Who is actually making these claims? Who is doing what? And so forth. So can you explain specifically what these complaints are and where they are emanating from?
Right. So the analysts in question are experts in Iraq and in Syria, and also in Al-Qaeda, and particularly the Al-Nusra Front in Syria, their branch there, and ISIS. We're talking about sort of very seasoned, line-level, if you will, analysts who spend their days looking at these groups and trying to assess their strengths, their weaknesses, what they might do next, what they've done historically. And then these reports that they generate based on this information that they're collecting are eventually, if you like, sort of moved up through the chain and eventually would go on to be potentially included in briefings for President Obama or senior military officials. But it all sort of generates with these kind of analysts who are looking at this very close up. You can almost kind of think of them as like reporters, and the people who sit above them would sort of be like their editors, so to equate it to the environment I work in every day. And what they're saying is that they are seeing some of their reports, key pieces of them that they think are very important, taken out, not giving the proper context, in some cases making it look like ISIS and Al-Qaeda are weaker than these analysts actually believe they are. Mm-hmm. And what they decided to do is raise these issues internally with their bosses, and our understanding is that they did not get a satisfactory response, and at that point decided to effectively blow the whistle and go to the Defense Department's Inspector General, their watchdog arm, and say, look, this is inappropriate, our reports are being doctored, this is interference, and this is not how intelligence analysis is supposed to work. So you've got people who essentially are standing by their own work and saying that what's coming out the other end looks different from how it did in the beginning.
That sounds horrifyingly familiar, frankly, for those of us who cover the Bush administration for all of these years. But these analysts, are they and I appreciate you can't give away, you know, that much about the sources and so forth, but are these independent contractors, or are these actually folks who are working for the I guess not the CIA here, but the DIA, the Defense Intelligence
right.
Agency?
Well, we know that these are professional career analysts. Mm-hmm. Some of them do work for the Defense Intelligence Agency and are working at Central Command, but are technically under the Defense